Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Good evening. This is Love Sport Radio, and I am Matthew Beadle, and I'm joined by the guys from Gunnerstown, Giles Anyam, Charlie East, and Chris Howard for the Arsenal Fan Show. And fellas, listen, I hope the team spirit in here is going to be amazing, because we need to continue working and improving things. Do I sound like anybody you might know?
We're all good here.
Fellas, listen, 3-2 over Aston Villa. What a performance. Resilience, strength of character. You just kept going and going and going. But 10 minutes before you got that equaliser, it was a slightly different story and a slightly different attitude inside the Emirates. Am
Never
I right?
Never in doubt.
Never in doubt, Charlie? No?
No.
Listen, before we go any further, I was with an Arsenal fan yesterday. And when it was 2-1, he was saying, you know what? I think he's done, Emery. I think he's done, mate. I think it's all over. No one's talking about the elephant in the room that is Nicola Pepe. No one's talking about the fact that he
Please
just can't get it
right. Please pass the message
on.
Your mate's a clown.
Truly believe that?
Yeah, truly believe that. Any Arsenal fan that wants a manager sacked after 16 months is an idiot.
You've teed him
this
up.
You've set me up my rant already.
Oh, Charlie made.
Do you know what? So there's going to be a Charlie's rant tonight. Let's dive straight head first into it.
Excuse me, I've just got my popcorn.
These Arsenal fans calling for a manager's head after 16 months in charge is absolutely ludicrous, and it infuriates me. It really does. I'm hearing various... Don't get me wrong, the majority of them are people on social media who don't frequent games, which is that's one way or the other, but it annoys me. I mean, the guy has taken over a club after a manager of 20 years, probably the hardest job in football to pick up, really, what he's done, other than maybe Sir Alex. But look what United have done since then. Sacking manager every 2 years. They've not improved. They've not improved at all.
They did win the Europa League.
Yeah, but we were very close to winning the Europa League. You know,
not in that final. We weren't very close at all.
But it just
thing is, Charlie. Let me ask you this: if the club had as much faith in him as you and others do, they would have given him not the 2 and 2+1.
You know what? I am open to reevaluate this at the end of the 2 years. I'm happy to do that. But to sack a football manager in October, when we're sitting in the top four, sitting in the top four. We've got half of our defence to come back. Is absolutely, and the mere fact even people is mentioning it, because them sort of things become toxic and they become spread like wildfire, these sort of things. Mm-hmm. Once someone gets on it, they think it's the right thing to jump on. And it just becomes toxic. It becomes toxic in the ground, it becomes toxic in away days, and it spreads through to the team. And we cannot afford that to happen at the moment.
I think I'm going to try and play devil's advocate.
I'm
not necessarily against what Charlie's saying, because we all want him to succeed, you know, for the sake of Arsenal. But if it gets to the point where, look, there's a manageable run of games now, yeah. After Man United, you've got 10 games where they're manageable. If we get to this Man City, which is mid December, and he's not improved things and we're going backwards, yeah. What do you say then? What do you think then?
I honestly think you give the man to the end of the season.
Can we afford, if we don't get Champions League, can we afford to let that happen?
What's guaranteeing bringing someone new in October or in December? You've got a new manager coming who very realistically, who's out there? I'm seeing people saying to me Allegri and Nangles. I said, who would you want instead? Some of the names I've seen pop up are ridiculous. People saying Mikel Arteta. Do you honestly think Mikel Arteta is going to leave Manchester City to come to us? No chance. Absolutely no chance.
Of course he would.
No chance. He'd be not by half through the season, no chance.
Be given the head coach role.
No,
very different from being an assistant manager.
I want him to succeed. If he's still in the mix by the time we reach Man City mid-December, because we've got a few, I've looked at the running fixtures in there, some dodgy games in there. If we're still in the mix, come Man City mid-December, and we get through that period, the Christmas period, fine. If we do not, if we come a cropper, if we come across with these, even before Man City, if we come across with these next 10 games, then serious questions have to be asked, because we cannot go another season outside of Champions League. If we are to get rid of him, get somebody else in.
So, I agree with that.
Just to jump in, sorry, to say if we're still in the mix, to say as long as we don't come a cropper in those next 10 games, what does that mean for Arsenal? Because as things stand, like you're saying, if Unai Emery is being questioned, you lost one game this season.
I know.
Some teams would bite your hand off for that record.
Matt, look at the manner of those games. Not just the results, you've got to look at the manner of those games. We've conceded 31 shots against Watford last week, 50 shots in total between the two sides this weekend.
Charles, right? I looked at that 30. Where are these shots thing coming again? I looked at the videos again, them shots, right? 11 or 12 of them were outside the six-yard box, virtually, really. They were nowhere near.
But the thing is, managers
Frankfurt,
are saying...
How many shots did Frankfurt have against us?
I think there was 40 shots in total, weren't there?
We won 3-0.
Yeah.
Well done.
But what's this telling me is that sides are saying, look, just have a go at them. Shoot from anywhere. Even if it's a poor... Even if there's a little chance of it hitting the target, Arsenal are that vulnerable, have a go. You're not seeing that against the other big teams.
Yeah, but that's happened for us for years, mate.
And the thing is, things are not getting any better. They're not really improving. That's my worry. No, we can say the result was we won 3-2 yesterday and we beat Burnley 2-1 and we beat Frankfurt. But the thing is, underlying that, the performances aren't great.
I get that. And sorry, Chris, you can come anytime you want here, mate. As we've just said, Maitland Niles, which I'm sure will come up later on today, is not a right back. And for me, it's been terrible. Okay? You've got Socrates, who me personally, I don't think can play out from the back the way we've tried to do it. Yep. David Luiz is a strange one, because I think the people blame him for the goal yesterday, but it was Callum Chambers' fault. By a country mile, the ball is laid out to him. You can apportion
blame to both of them, really, because Louise could have been closer in tracking down Wesley. I mean, Wesley's not done a lot. He's just died towards the near post.
If Callum Chambers don't lose the ball, that doesn't even come into play.
Very true.
So it's Callum Chambers' fault.
But there are always football matches. Yeah, everything revolves around mistakes that happen at different parts of the pitch. Mm. So if Callum Chambers doesn't make that mistake, then who's to say that, you know, if he doesn't make that mistake, then further up the pitch another mistake happens and then comes back the lead. So it's variable.
It's also still, that's still playing out from the back. Not as extreme as last week, but that was still as a result of playing out from the back when you just don't need to. Leno's given that to Luiz, right? Yeah. And Luiz, the only thing I can liken that to, right, because as soon as you give it away, and yes, Callum Chambers should have done better with the control, but as soon as you do that and then you lose the ball, you are instantly on the back foot because you're already so deep. I liken that to playing Sunday morning football, right? When you're smashing a team 10-11, 12-0. We were all there back in the day. And David Luiz as a centre-back was a bit like, I just want to play. I want the ball at my feet. I want to play. He didn't need the ball there. No. He didn't need it. And as a result, he was out of position. Yes, he should have been closer to Wesley, but it was all just a massive mishmash as a result playing out from the back.
We didn't do that as much as I did, we?
But that still came from it, that goal.
Mm. It feels like there's been a bit of a lesson learned, but I think... Yeah. If you, again, just to flank you on the other side of devil's advocate, I think one of the issues that people have is that they are seeing consistent mistakes made on a regular basis. And what people are getting frustrated with is the fact that these are the mistakes that we've seen from last season. It seems a bit of a hangover from last season. And I think that is where the frustration's coming. On your point on social media, people tend to feed off of each other through social media. So if you get one or two people who have a little bit of influence, I don't want to go into marketing spiel and talk to influencers, but when you do get an influencer that has a narrative, then sometimes that narrative gets weaved into other people's psyche, and then they build that, and it builds to a crescendo, and all of a sudden it just erupts. And I see that with players. Like, I know you've got your own issues with Mustafi, but that really came to a head because it was almost like within the space of a few weeks, all of a sudden everyone turned on him. And I feel like it's because the narrative changed. And then it changed inside the stadium, and then it was gone.
He's done the same now to Xhaka.
And we'll talk about Xhaka in a bit.
Done the same now to Xhaka.
That could potentially be the same thing. And I think that's wrong.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, I've always defended Xhaka. Yeah, I think this season, I think he's indefensible. I can't defend him because he's been, as you've rightly said, he has made so many mistakes. And as I said with the Emery stuff, I am open to reviewing this at the end of the season. I really am, and maybe if we don't meet top four, he has got to go. but he has to be given the opportunity to try and achieve what he'd been set out to do. Sacking a manager after 16 months would be... I'll be so disappointed that my football club done that. I'll be gutted. So we're not Southampton, we're not Watford.
Here's a question for you. Do you think that tactically Emery got it wrong against Watford?
The only thing I think Emery gets wrong at the minute is playing Guendouzi and Xhaka in the same team.
Well, yeah, that's, I agree with that.
That is something I think what is completely against. I think that is what is going wrong. Mm. And I'm hoping, but yesterday, watching Xhaka go off and then Guendouzi flourishing, because being fair, first half yesterday, Guendouzi was terrible. I know he's getting lots of
plays. Yeah, I agree with that.
Goal was his fault.
Yeah,
I'm hoping that maybe Emery has seen that. Let's get something wrong. We don't know what's happening in training. I'm sure Granit Xhaka in training every day is a leader on that pitch. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. He probably stands out, and he probably...
That's probably why he's most likely to get the captaincy.
Exactly, and I think that is probably the case. Mm. I do think he needs a break from that team for his sake and for the fans' sake, because I think he has become a major scapegoat now. Mm.
But his wife's going to be in labour soon.
Give him a break. Yeah. Give him a little break. You asked me a question earlier on about what's it around in the crowd yesterday. Mm. No one where I sat really was turned on Emery so much, but they were turned on Xhaka. Mm. Really turned on Xhaka.
I don't like seeing that.
And I don't like seeing that to a player who I think he does care. I think he does care about Arsenal, I think.
Can I tell you then, and it relates
Mustafi,
to Xhaka.
I thought would laugh about it. I mean, he looked like he didn't care. Mm. Do you know what I mean?
Can I tell you something which does frustrate me about Emery, and perhaps this is another reason why it's building, this sort of fan sentiment is building. When Emery arrived, he made it very clear that this was going to be a meritocracy. It doesn't matter about how much you're earning. It doesn't matter what your name is. I'm going to play based on form. And I feel like Xhaka maybe is an instance, maybe Sócrates is an instance as well. We're not seeing that. We're not seeing the meritocracy, because if we were, then if you're going to have two or three bad games, as I think Sócrates has now had, North London derby, Watford away.
But who plays ahead of him at the minute?
Oh, I'll play Callum Chambers.
I'll play Chambers.
Well, yeah, I think maybe you may see that, but I think I do agree with that. But the other side of it, Emery played Saka yesterday and Ozil didn't get a look in. Mm. So...
Yeah, but this is again. This adds to my point. I don't think it's a meritocracy. I think he's exactly the same as Wenger and other managers. He's
so
got
he has
his favourites.
He trusts.
Yeah, and he decided that he isn't Ozil isn't a favourite. Xhaka is a favourite.
Do we miss Ozil?
Not in my book.
No.
Do you miss Ozil? Well, we are going to discuss that, Charlie. After this, it's the Arsenal Fan Show on Love Sport.
Love Sport.
Good evening, this is Love Sport and I'm Matt Beadle, joined by the guys from Gunnerstown, because this is the Arsenal Fan Show on a Monday night on Love Sport. We are reflecting on that 3-2 win over Aston Villa yesterday, that incredible, emphatic 3-2 win against Aston Villa yesterday. Some conjecture in the studio as to how emphatic that win was, but we were talking about subs, guys, earlier, and you mentioned this, Chris, about whether Unai Emery got his substitutions wrong last week against Watford. Can we not flip that on its head now and say, do you know what? He learned from that and he got it bang on
spot
yesterday.
On. Well, right, yeah, absolutely. Well, I thought he got it. I mean, okay, he was forced into a position, but he could have brought in Ozil. He didn't. He brought in Torreira.
Exactly. You talk about the meritocracy as well.
You're talking about controlling the game.
On the bench.
Being an attacker, he's brought in Ozil Torreira and Willock, who both really, really affected the game.
Yeah.
They helped Guendouzi affect the game in a positive manner.
Yeah.
What I'm not sure about is whether we won because of Emery's tactical interventions or not. I mean, I suppose bringing in those two subs is a form of tactical intervention.
You have to give him that credit.
Yeah.
Like, we have to both lambast him for probably the team selection, because I think, what you said earlier is absolutely bang on the money. Granit Xhaka and Matteo Guendouzi do not work together. They are too similar.
Yeah.
Going forward, absolutely fine. Xhaka can see, he's got vision in front of him. He can spot passes, he can play forward balls, he can play the ball through the lines. Absolutely fine. Guendouzi's energy, his creativity, he's got movement, going forward. Absolutely no problem. But defensively, there are massive issues with both, mainly because I don't think Granit Xhaka, it's not that he can't see what's going on, he just doesn't have the engine to do it. Guendouzi has the engine, he just doesn't seem to have the brain, which is fine. He's 20 years old.
Kid.
Maybe he'll evolve, and hopefully he will evolve. But right now, that doesn't work.
I think tactically he got it wrong at first. He put three midfielders in there who can't tackle. You've got Ceballos, you got Guendouzi, you got Xhaka. You can't spot and close off the danger.
Willock's been at this place, he
was on the bench. Started on the bench. And what you saw Aston Villa doing was, as what happened last week, strolling through our midfield.
Yeah.
Just strolling on unabated. You know, because you've got three midfielders, it's all creativity. We're supposed to have control. If you've got those three midfielders in there, you're telling me we're expecting to have control of the game. And there was no control of the game.
And this is an issue that I have as well, is that, and this is an Emery tactical thing, because when you've got that much space, you've basically got too much space between defence, midfield and attack. And that's why we're creating that much space, because we're pressing high in patches. Mm. And that then means that we've got acres for teams to then just, as soon as you break beyond that line of press, it's absolutely acres of space. And we saw that yesterday. Villa had three or four players with the freedom of the Emirates in the middle of the park.
Moment with John McGinn, where he kind of did a little pirouette and still had space and got the shot off. Obviously, a good save from Bernard.
I thought Jack Grealish was superb yesterday.
Yeah.
I thought, just watching him live, how he just sort of he bossed the midfield. I don't know if that's how we were poor or not, but the way he just controlled the game for the first half, and the way he just, his but movement.
Weren't you concerned that we couldn't get near them?
I was a little bit at the time, but that was the first half. I generally thought with Xhaka and Guendouzi in there, I thought it was terrible.
I thought those three, I just don't think you can have those
three. You
weren't
really getting much from Pepe. He wasn't doing nothing out there. Saka was working hard, to be fair, running out. Ceballos was poor, wasn't he?
Ceballos was very poor. You were saying about tackling. I made a note of it. 13 duels, he won 5.
Yeah. You just start to see this occasionally from these players that come from the likes of La Liga. We saw it with David Silva when he first came to the Premier League with Man City. Had an initial impact, but then it just took him a bit of a while to just get used to the physical nature and the pace and the power of the Premier League. We might see that with Ceballos. Just going back to Matteo Guendouzi, obviously always a top conversation on this particular show, Charlie. You've aired your grievances with him in the past. He's come back to, you know, oppose you and almost prove you wrong.
Yesterday was Jekyll and Hyde.
It was, wasn't it? I mean, the first goal, he lost his man. Mm-hmm. But the second half, and particularly the second goal, can I say that was slightly Vieira-esque?
You grabbing the ball by the horns. He did a similar thing at the North London Derby as well. Second half, much better.
Yeah.
Sorry, Giles, go on.
He's
quite offended it's been compared to Vieira.
No, the only similarity I can see with Vieira is that young petulance, that he's a bad loser, he's a sore loser.
Yeah.
And do you know what I mean? I love that about him. He's a bad loser. If things are going wrong, he'll get in your face, he'll be a nuisance, he'll try and drive it. He's that typical player in the school ground that you either, if he's on your team, you love him. If you're playing against him, you absolutely
He's gonna be that player. Yeah. Opposing fans are going to hate.
Yeah.
Not because he's quality, but the way he is. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? When we beat Tottenham last year, he was outside the car waving all his hands up. The Watford thing last week.
Apparently, he said to John Terry at the end of the game, he said,
he had some words with him.
Yeah, some words. He goes, I'm in your head now. You know, so he said that to John Terry at the end of the game. So, you know, he's got that kind of personality, and that's what I like about him. That's what I compare him to Vieira. But I mean, in terms of his performance in the second half, typical Guendouzi, I think when you want to go forward, you want to impress in the game, he's the kind of player that you want. I don't see him as a DM. That's my issue with him.
No, I agree with that.
You know, I don't think he's a DM at all. I think he's a forward player, thinking player.
I'm going to throw something out here for you. Oh. We discussed it in the car yesterday on the way back. When everyone's back fit, David Luiz, defensive midfielder. Even yesterday, that time he was in the corner, he beat a player. He doesn't lose
the
ball.
He can do it.
When everybody's back fit, so then what's your defence?
I'm not saying it as a general term, but Holding.
Yeah.
Socrates.
Yeah.
Or Chambers. Mm. Bellerin.
And Tierney.
Luiz just in front. Screen the back four.
Well, the thing about that, one of the challenges that we had yesterday is that
we haven't got no one to tackle.
Mm. The thing, well, Lucas Torreira.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
Mm. But the challenge is that I feel like he feels like the only one that fits into that gap at the moment. And because he's been away on international duty, you know, he came back late and he's taken his time to get in.
His season hasn't really started yet, has it?
It hasn't started, exactly, Charles. Mm. So I wonder if we need a backup to that. To me, that backup would either be Chambers because he did it brilliantly at Fulham, or you play someone like David Luiz.
Yeah.
Can we talk about Callum Chambers?
Yep.
Yeah.
Please.
Played a pivotal role yesterday when he came on. And I think that I'm not going to turn around and say that's what Callum Chambers gives you. But let's not forget, he came to prominence at Southampton as a marauding right back, but an attacking right back, which is where he was noticed by Arsene Wenger. Great finish. by the way. Yeah. Fantastic finish. Fantastic. And he played a part in the winner as well, because he was in that wall. And for a long time, he was just looking directly at Tom Heaton.
Yeah.
And then he did the little spin, and they were moaning that he fouled. He made a foul. He didn't. It was a great free kick from Aubameyang. But Callum Chambers, you know, is this pushing for a regular first team spot?
Not a right back.
Yeah, exactly. I'd say that. I think he's done an admirable job for the kind of player he is as a right back. He's not a right back, but I'd put him inside in the right
back. You got to think the one clean sheet we've kept this season, he was centre half.
Yeah.
I mean, that was against terrible Newcastle United
team.
However, I think that, again, like I said, I was a big fan of Sogradis last season. I can say his name properly, so I would be.
I love it when you say his name.
You do. Say it again.
Sogradis.
Oh.
Careful there, Charlie.
We've moved into a different realm of the Arsenal fan show.
But anyway, I think his form is such that he's got to be pulled. He's got to be hooked.
I think he's a one-season player. I think he had one season in him, and we saw that last season. And even towards the end of last season, he was starting to... There's too many rickets in his game. And this season, every game so far this season, I think Sogradis...
I'm losing a bit of confidence of him. And as I said last week as well, I don't want so much pressure to be on Rob Holding coming back.
No, I think
because he needs to be eased in. He needs to be sort of... I'm hoping he gets a game tomorrow against Forest.
I think he should.
I think he should. And I'd like to see him all... Does Ozil play tomorrow?
It should.
Should he?
He's going to play against Notts Forest, so...
Well, we pay him enough. We should get him a game on there somehow.
Well, when you look at the weekend, just to finish up on, there are a couple more points that we do need to touch on before
we finish this
discussion.
Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang.
That's one of them, Charlie, believe it or not.
I mean, there's one guy I want to call him out, a friend of mine, Matt, Tottenham fan, used to call him the Gabonese Jamie Vardy.
That is outrageous.
I mean, the guy is...
Top
up there with the elite.
16 goals in his last 16 games in all competitions, and the fact that he gave Nicola Pepe that penalty speaks volumes. I mean, some people will go, oh, he's not got that ruthless streak as a striker, especially when Sergio Aguero is scoring a goal a game and is battling him for that golden boot. It's going to be competitive this season if Tammy Abraham continues. Mo Salah, we know, will be up there, as will Sadio Mane. But the fact that he gave Pepe the penalty to get off the mark and then won the game for Arsenal,
he is.
Do you remember when we signed him?
People were saying he was
a bit of a troublemaker.
Yeah,
can't be farther from the truth. Yeah. He's absolutely loved within the club.
He is, isn't he,
Charlie?
He's absolutely world class, what you
brandishing
there? I've got a
little
stat here for Aubameyang, which is just 72 games he's been involved in at Arsenal. In that time, he's scored 48 goals and 12 assists. That's an average goal involvement every 94 minutes.
You can't have him off the field. You can't. You need him on the field.
And that is with a team, really. And people were saying yesterday when I was moaning on Twitter, oh, imagine if we didn't have Aubameyang. Well, we do. And I'm very, very happy about it.
Such a stupid argument. Oh, no.
Imagine if the sky wasn't blue.
Oh, yeah. Imagine if we'd have signed Ronaldo that day or something.
And what was great was his celebration as well. You can tell it really meant so much to him.
Yeah. Somebody said on Twitter it reminded them of... Bakary Sagna's header against Tottenham. You know, that kind of, the way it kind of lifted the whole place, you know what I mean? It was that kind of, it was a pivotal.
That goal yesterday, the ground, that Emirates, I've not seen the Emirates, I think it gets to get a lot of unfair stick, the Emirates, because on a big game, it is a good atmosphere in there. That goal yesterday was mental.
Yeah.
It really was. I haven't seen it like that since Welbeck scored against Leicester.
I was going to say that. That stood out.
But
yesterday, that was a roar, and it was mental when that goal went in yesterday. It wasn't expected.
And
limbs, as they call it.
Limbs.
And for me, it was almost a classic Arsenal performance, but the type of performance as well that you look back and think that was exactly what it was like under Arsene Wenger. I think that's the danger with the way that people are viewing Emery at the moment. It's the constant comparison of, oh, it's just like it was back in the day.
Yeah, I think as well, like, another point I want to back Emery a little bit. People say, oh, people don't understand what he's doing. The players don't know. They're not behind. If the players weren't fully behind the manager... We don't win that game today.
I don't think it's a matter of players not. I think the players
like him. They do like him.
To the youngsters when they've been.
They love him. They love Lundberg involved. Yeah. They love the whole setup.
They like the training session. Well, they like the fact that he's improving them and whatnot. My growing issue with it is, he came in. We thought he was a defensive coach, like he'd sort out the defense and be a bit more. And I don't see that. I don't see that. No, and if we don't win games with four goals, we're gonna. It's that kind of. We're in that territory. We need to score four to win.
To be fair, Giles, one of his first interviews, he did say, "I prefer to win games 5-4." So that probably should have been to us.
But really. you would also take that in terms of the entertainment.
Yesterday, I thoroughly enjoyed yesterday. It's fantastic.
Really.
That's what you want from football, isn't it?
If you were to break down the game over 90 minutes, you thoroughly enjoyed it.
Come on, man. It was fun yesterday. People moaning. There was people happy. It was, you know, when you know,
when you're on the right side
Chelsea
of the result,
fans,
though, Charlie.
I understand that. Yeah. But you know, like years ago, when like Chelsea fans might be winning when they had Mourinho, winning 1-0. But I know Chelsea fans who used to go, man, they used to hate going to football. Yeah. They're bored. They're boring. It was just, all right, you won, defended well. It's boring. At least Arsenal, you're in for some goals. You're in for a bit of
Kevin Keegan football.
You're on that roller coaster, but it is no clean sheet since the opening day. You had this exact same problem last season. What is it? 10 goals in 5 games now. Bernd Leno, by the way, came out yesterday and said that he thought Arsenal deserved the victory. I'm not entirely sure that's accurate. We haven't finished this debate. There are a few more things I want to talk about. That's coming up on the Arsenal Fan Show on Love Sport.
This is Love Sport.
Yes, this is Love Sport. It's the Arsenal Fan Show with me, Matt Beadle, and the guys from Gunnerstown. I've just been panned in the break because I said that I'm not convinced Bernd Leno's claim that Arsenal deserved to win that game was justified. You guys disagree with me.
Let me smash you with some stats, Matt. 58% to 42 possession with 10 men. This is over 90 minutes. With 10 men, we had 58% to 42. We had 21 shots on target to their 14, 465 passes to their 326. This is with 10 men for two-thirds of the game.
He's a stat man.
There we go. Victory, like you look at the stats, but also we were terrible in the first half.
We were.
And I agree with you that Villa, well, actually it was Giles, Villa should have seen the game out.
Should have.
However, we were the better team. We created more chances. Guendouzi off the post as well, forced a rebound off of Heaton. The ball was almost exclusively in Villa's half for a large chunk of that second half. And they broke occasionally, and we had too much gaps, and we're picking holes in Arsenal, but we were the better team.
And what's the stat on the goals, mate?
Mic dropped.
Exit stage left.
Fair enough.
Hey, you're too knackered, aren't you?
It's up for debate, absolutely. I think that Villa could have killed the game off, but you're right. I mean, listen, I was the one who said that I think Arsenal showed great resilience, great character.
Shearer said that last night as well, which I was surprised about. He loves to have a dig at us, Alan Shearer. But he said the second half performance showed a lot of character
grit.
From Arsenal,
grit
to come back. Because years gone by, they may not have come back through that. Mm.
There is a gigantic caveat here, though, however. Mm. Handball.
What? I didn't see it.
I did not see it.
I mean, this has been, it's been kind of glossed over, which,
what,
in my opinion, is an absolute disgrace the powers that be.
Socrates.
Yes, your mate, Socrates. There has never been a more blatant, in today's climate, with the nonsense that is VAR, the absolute guffery of VAR that exists in modern football right now, how on earth that cannot be given with VAR is just beyond recognition. It's beyond comprehension. It's absolutely absurd.
I don't know how you say, but I think we got away with it.
I thought it looked worse when they slowed it right down.
It was down by his arm.
It's him up there.
Yeah. So that's the first one. The second one.
Charlie's, don't let me lose respect.
There was a similar incident in the Villa box, which nobody did anything with. The Arsenal players just walked away with. But there was a ball booted against the Villa players. It was booted against Grealish's hand. And his hands are down by his side. Well, Socrates, his hands was, if they were sort of by
they
his
were
side
not in
like
an
that.
Unnatural position, is what you're saying.
He wasn't holding it up in the air. If he's holding it up in the air, you say,
so therefore,
you can't complain.
If the ball strikes the defender's arm, then it's not a penalty, right?
But we're led to believe this season, with all this nonsense with VAR, that if ball hits hand, it's a penalty regardless. He went out. Regardless of that, he went out. You cannot even entertain the argument that it wasn't a penalty. It wasn't given. So
yes,
you can turn.
We
it's,
can.
It's easier to turn around now and say, well, yeah, 100% it was a stonewaller, but it wasn't given. So. Mm. Who cares? We won. Mm. It was a penalty. Was it a sending off?
No.
I don't think the second one was. I thought the first one was yellow card.
So you're talking about Maitland-Niles?
Maitland-Niles,
yeah. Oh, right.
First one was yellow card. I thought the second one, he won the ball first.
Yeah, it was just a follow through. I just think it was unfortunate.
I'm actually going to sit on the other side of the fence. I think it was a sending off, only because he was clumsy. And if you're on a yellow and you go to ground, I'm not saying that that's how football should be, but that is what it is. If you go to ground and you make John Moss make a decision, and he's the sort of referee that will happily get his card in his pocket.
He's one of the worst refs, you know.
He should not be fit enough.
He's rubbish.
He's not fit enough to referee from the centre of the pitch.
But you've still given him that decision because Maitland asked whether he slipped. We won the ball first. You know, if you win the ball first, but you go in two-footed and take the ball, and then the player's the other side of the ball, you're off because it's reckless. And I wonder if that's what Moss had thought. The thing that I do wonder, though, is sometimes... shouldn't a video ref say, actually, you're wrong there, mate? Because John Moss had already made his mind up. He wasn't even looking. Yeah. He wasn't even going to say to VAR, can you just double check that for me? He had his hand out. Mm. He had his yellow card out already.
And he was wrong.
But
I think that's the natural instinct of referees that they're still trying to get used to. Because as a referee, you instantly get that's a yellow card. You're off. And they would have looked at it. They would have reviewed it. That's just the way that
Why is every tackle a yellow card nowadays as well?
Well, that's another issue altogether. Back in the day, that's a good challenge. You've got the ball and then you've gone through the man and that's a proper challenge.
Even the Villa, there's a couple of yellow cards just now. It's just a tackle. It's a foul. Mm-hmm. But not every foul has to be a yellow card. It's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. I want to go back to just the substitution, how the substitutions changed the effect of the game, and particularly Torreira's role. Because generally, I see him as a player that should be at the base of the defense, of the midfield. But yesterday, I saw the reason why, in this instance, he plays further up the field because we needed to press Aston Villa. Even in the beginning of the second half, if you remember, they were still in the ascendancy a bit, and his intervention along with Willock allowed us to have that bit more energy, that bit, you know, just to sort of get in their faces and not allow them to come out. And I thought in that instance, I saw why Torreira plays further forward. But generally, as a general rule, I think he should stay at the base of midfield.
Do you know what else he does really well, Torreira, as well? But none of our midfielders do, not Xhaka, not Guendouzi, really. Plays forward.
Yeah.
He gets the ball at his feet and he wants to go forward. Guendouzi, Xhaka, they like the side pass. They like to go to the side, go to the fullbacks, go out wide. Torreira gets the ball, he's all quick, gets the ball at his feet, wants to go forward. And that's... It just puts the team on the back foot straight away. You straight away go forward, bit of pace, bit of inject, bit of pace into the ball. Straight away, you're on the back foot, aren't you? Because you're bypassing the other midfielders in there. And people think, oh, crap, someone behind me. Now you've got to run back. And he does that really well, Torreira. He's always looking forward.
Do you think the reason why Emery might prefer the other two is because of their more expansive passing?
Torreira's not 100% fit. That's why he's not playing. Simple as. He's been travelling to Uruguay and back, or South America and back. He's got a niggly little groin strain that's still not gone at the moment. So that's the only reason why I think if he's fully fit, he plays.
Do you believe the conspiracy theorist that because he's not a tall, athletic footballer? I mean, he is athletic, but not, you know, the six foot sort of Steven Nzonzi style. That's why he's not getting looking.
I think because it does seem as though Emery's kind of. It could be because he's not fully fit.
Did he start the other night, Torreira?
Against Frankfurt.
Yeah, he did, yes. So maybe that. Maybe I don't know. I don't know.
But the thing is, he tends to start in fair right field. So if you wanted to do that role, you wouldn't really want that from somebody that's not fully fit. You know, to be pressing high up the field. And
I didn't think he had a great game Thursday night at Frankfurt, to be fair. I think he's one of our weaker players. He kept giving the ball away, Frankfurt. I didn't know. It's very unlike him. That's why it stood out to me. He kept giving the ball away, and Willock really controlled the game the other night. Yesterday again, Willock, superbly come on.
We're going to get on to Frankfurt because it's worth touching on that because some of those kids did play. A quick stat before we finish on the Aston Villa stuff, and I was surprised by this. Only 9 occasions in the Premier League has a team gone down to 10 men whilst in a losing position and won the game. Only 9 occasions.
Yeah.
Arsenal responsible for 33.3% of those.
Wow.
So. Yeah. I'm not going to ask you to name the other two because that is a tough quiz, but it is Derby in 97 and Bolton in 2008.
Wow.
There you go.
One point I think was at that game yesterday. I always thought we could come back. I always think we can at home. No, we used to go quite behind quite a lot, didn't we? And we'd always turn it around. Go one of them the first half, win three.
Second half FC.
And I just think, at home, it just seems like they suck it in at that end. I don't know, I don't ever seem like we're out of a game.
Mm.
We've also had a tweet in as well from Chris Davison, friend of the show, of course, who has said there are questions being asked about the coach, and that's fair. But saying he deserved the sack at this point in time is wrong. He's on your side, Charlie. However, things must improve with defence and overall team performance, or Unai will be putting his job on the line. Top four is a must.
I agree with that. I totally. And if Unai Emery does not reach top four or win Europa League this season, he's up for the taking. I admit that. He's got to be allowed a chance to reach his goal. Yeah. He has to.
Yeah, I don't think he should be sacked in October. However, I would like the position to be reviewed in December.
Okay, but in December, if we're 5 points off top four,
like I said, if we're not in the mix, come December, then cut it.
But what is the mix? What is the mix? How far off is that?
If we're floundering like 10 points off the top four, and we're coming up to Man City, Man United, Chelsea, Leicester, and whatnot, what's the point of keeping him?
No, what's the point? I agree with that. I think it's very highly likely that we won't be. But yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I'm saying. If we're still in the mix, we're still around in and around there, fine. Because that run of games there, we got to get something out of it, at least.
We could be close to Liverpool. Who knows? Yeah,
you never know. You never know. But if
champions,
we're not,
Charles, yeah. Champions.
We're not getting close to Liverpool, are they? Let's be honest.
No,
because it's always around that Christmas period. We seem to. Yeah. Last season, we had a good start.
Yeah.
And then we. You know.
And it's a hard run of fixtures over that period.
It is.
So.
Frankfurt, Charlie, you were out there?
I was out of here.
Yeah, talk to me.
Great. It was.
Oktoberfest, was it?
Yeah, it was nice. There's lots of beer.
It was
drunk.
September.
V gets Dinah Joy. Yeah,
it wouldn't have been Oktoberfest, mate. No. Wrong month for that.
I'll tell you what was a funny story. Was in a bar. Was in a bar, and my mate Johnny was drinking white beer, what they call it? Weiss beer. So I was in a bar after the game, so quite drunk. I said to him, Wasser. She just give me 2 pints of water.
Wasser. Wasser's water, mate.
You donut.
But no.
A good performance. He blooded some of the youngsters.
We see the team. Mm-hmm. People, when we was out there, we were going, what's he doing? Why are we playing this team? And I saw everyone. I think there was a couple of people in his room here probably thought, what's going on here? But it worked.
Do you know what I like?
We had a lot of chances as well. Mm. We missed a lot.
We created a lot of chances. We gave away a lot of chances. It was a bit of a gamble. I don't mind that gamble in the Europa League.
Martinez,
and I don't mind seeing those kids. Yeah. I don't mind seeing those kids perform.
Emi Martinez,
like
superb.
Oh, he was brilliant.
Superb.
You've been talking about
him. Yeah. My dad has always been a huge goalkeeper. Yeah. Been a huge fan of him and Martinez from day one.
He was very brave as well. He's a lump.
That's the difference. He's a big guy. Come and claim things. Callum Chambers, superb. And I'm not going to say it too loudly.
Mustafi
done all right.
He did.
What was the reception like for Mustafi?
Did you applaud him?
I'm very fair. I'll give him a little tweet as well. I'm quick to dig you out, mate, but we'll play today. I don't see you anytime soon, but well done.
I'm sure he appreciated that. But it's funny, isn't it, when you look at a man who was, what, a 42, 43 million pound player just in the doldrums and just being wheeled out for a first game in the Europa League group stages.
You know, someone else as well, it just doesn't do it for me, is Kolasinac at the minute and all. Mm. He's not a left back, is he?
No.
Can't defend, and to let Monreal go, I still think we regret that a bit.
I don't like the decision to let Monreal go, but if Tierney's, he looks like he's a couple of weeks away.
I think he'll play tomorrow night.
You reckon?
Yeah, I think so. Look, I didn't watch the game on
the under 23s,
but people I know did watch it. So he looks sharp.
Yeah, 62 minutes. Him and Bellingham.
Hopefully, get them.
So what's the team?
What, tomorrow?
For Forest.
Well, it is Forest tomorrow, of course, and then after Forest, it's the trip to play Manchester United. Monday Night Football on Sky Sports. Talking about that next.
Love Sports.
This is Love Sports, the Arsenal fan show with the guys from Gunnerstown and me, Matt Biddle. Yes, it's opposition view because after the game with Forest in midweek is the Carabao Cup, Arsenal travel to Old Trafford, the theatre of dreams, where they have not won, gents, since the 2006-07 season. Adebayor, a penalty missed in that game as well, I believe. Mm. Thomas Kushak saving for Manchester United. To talk about that, we have got our North West correspondent on the line, Mark Flanagan. Mark, how do you see this game going after United's catastrophic 2-0 defeat, shall we say, at the London Stadium against West Ham this weekend?
Well, good evening, Matt, and good evening, boys. I'm sure you're looking forward to 3 points on Monday.
Well, honestly, going to Old Trafford is not somewhere we have much hope. But Monday nights, give us a little bit of hope. Roll back a couple of years ago.
Yes. Well, of course, and I think the sort of the silver lining really for United that they'll be grasping at any kind of straws at the moment is that it actually looks like Martial might be fit for that game. So
great.
Any kind of thing like that is United fans are going to grasp onto, because I think if he hadn't been fit, Ollie would have been looking at the under-16s for a striker. It's got that bad.
Could have got his own boots on.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the striking obviously is an issue with the injuries, but I think more pertinently is the lack of kind of dynamism and creativity in midfield. Arsenal have got that kind of knack. They feel like Arsenal are going to score at least once. And I think if Arsenal take the lead at Old Trafford, you know, you just get that feeling that United just aren't going to score. I think they've scored 5 goals in their last 6 games. Obviously, the Chelsea game apart, they've really struggled to break down teams. Obviously, Arsenal's defence isn't the greatest, but they've got they've got so much more going forward, Arsenal, than Manchester United at the moment. And I think if you were making a composite team of the Arsenal and Manchester United, you'd probably take sort of 5 out of the 6 Arsenal front players. Maybe you'd have De Gea and you'd have Maguire, but apart from that, and Wan-Bissaka maybe even, but apart from that, United are so short going forward, it's getting quite embarrassing, really.
Hi, Mark. I read somewhere that Man United have only won 4 of the last 15, continuing from last season to this season. I mean,
yeah, that's right. Yeah.
What is the atmosphere like within the fan base towards Ole Gunnar Solskjaer? Because the impression is he's not getting. I think that squad is capable of getting top 4 when you look at the names on paper, the kind of players you've got. Okay, your front line is a bit undercooked, but why can't he get a performance out of that squad?
Well, I think actually over the last sort of 3 years, and in terms of previous managers have had a go, and there's been a sort of steady, gradual decline. I think there's been a real sort of calibration of Manchester United fans' expectations, really. And I think that, they've watched them week in, week out, gradually decline. I think they understand that the problems are much more deep-rooted than the manager. Obviously, the fact he is, a legend and scored the famous goal in the Champions League final gives him a bit more time with the fans. But, Man United fans who go week in, week out understand that this is a problem that comes from the Glazers and the fact that the lack of understanding about what it takes to run a successful football club. And I'm talking about the Glazers in terms of their appointments and the direction that they give, not in terms of they're given money and managers have had money to spend, but the lack of structure and the way that Manchester City particularly have kind of shown them exactly how it should be done makes it even worse. And you only have to look 3 miles over the city to see how a football club should be run. And I think United fans, that's their deep-rooted hatred of the Glazers and how that's all kind of unfolded over the last 10 years, really, is what stops them really sort of going for Ollie in a big way, because they know that he's not actually the issue.
Hi, Mark. I did see, I don't know if it's true or not, I see a stat yesterday that since Fergie's left, you've actually spent the same amount of money as Man City as well. Did you aware of that at all?
Yeah, I think it's in terms of gross spending. I think Manchester United's net spending is lower than Manchester City's. Yeah, because of the players that they recruit, obviously famously Ronaldo and Tevez and people like that. So yeah, I think it's close to. I think they've both spent about 950 million, but United have recruited a lot more. That was a slightly kind of misleading statistic.
Yeah,
they've still spent the money, and they've still, they spent 60 million on Di Maria and Falcao, and all these players who, I mean, look at Di Maria now. I mean, look at putting in a fantastic performance midweek in the Champions League. It's not just that they're bringing in the wrong players; it's the mismanaging the players. Yeah. It's the fact that people like Rashford haven't developed like you'd hope they would. Martial hasn't developed like...
Even Pogba, I think Pogba's absolutely fantastic. You put him in another team, he would flourish, be the best. Like, how he is for France, stands out week in, week out, wherever he plays for him, best player on the pitch by a country mile.
Yeah. I mean, this is it. There's so many worries about the kind of long term sort of planning and how it all works at Old Trafford, that obviously that kind of overshadows much of what goes on the pitch. And people were, you know, Man United fans going to that game on Sunday, they weren't expecting to win at all, you know. But that to me was, it was quite a close game against West Ham. Two very evenly matched teams, but United, West Ham just had a bit more in attack. Man United had a couple of chances. Maguire had a good chance. And if, you know, Mata just missed that cross. You know, people are saying it was, you know, it was an awful performance. To me, that's, you know, West Ham and Manchester United are two teams who are going to finish between sort of 6th and 10th. Mm. And I think a lot of Man United fans have kind of come to accept that's how it's going to be this season.
Yeah. So, Mark, just a quick one then. On the tactical side of the game on Monday. So one of the challenges Arsenal have had is that we're very, very open, particularly in the middle of the park. From a United perspective, where we're vulnerable is going back to front. So if United have got the ball, going back to front, and we'll leave a lot of space. Do United have the pace in the midfield to transition from back to front quickly? Let's just say Arsenal attack in, there's a turnover of possession. Do they have the pace in the players available to do that? Or if not, who is the closest to be able to deliver on that, going back to front, transitioning quickly?
Yeah, well, to finish up, Mark, I have to bring you the breaking news that Jurgen Klopp has won the Best FIFA Men's Coach Award. Well, there we go. What a way to finish. Mark Flanagan, thank you very much for joining
cheers,
us,
Mark.
As always. We'll speak to you very soon.
Cheers.
That was Mark Flanagan, the Love Sport Radio Northwest correspondent. Jurgen Klopp, there we go. Best Men's FIFA Coach. What a surprise.
Something else Pochettino ain't won.
Sorry. Yeah. Chaps, we are nearly at the end. That was Mark Flanagan's thoughts. What are your thoughts, your hopes, your dreams, your predictions of, again, 2006-07, the last time you won a game at Old Trafford?
He made an interesting point that, because, yeah, I see Ole Gunnar Solskjaer as a sort of a counter-attacking kind of guy. And Arsenal will try and flood forward. And I do worry that if Martial is back and Pogba is back, and
I think Rashford not being there is a big plus for
James
us.
With his pace.
James, don't do down Martial. Martial's probably
Martial's
more clinical.
Martial's class.
But just
he's
coming
more clinical.
Back from fitness. What we're getting, and I feel like I say this every week now, is that it is another massive, massive game in the Premier League. Yeah. We're not even 10 games in. It's a huge game.
More pressure on United than us.
Oh, a hell of a lot more.
With the results yesterday.
Yeah, absolutely. Predictions?
2-2.
Ooh. I'm going to be positive. I think we're going to do a bit. I think Pepe going to, with that big space on that pitch, I think it's his game to shine this next week.
He's
3-1.
I want us to win. And deep down, I really want to be able to say we're going to win. But I'm still going to hit a 1-1 draw.
A 1-1 draw. Well, no one's gone for a defeat.
I'll take a draw now, personally.
Lovely stuff. Well, this has been the Arsenal Fan Show on Love Sport. We'll see you at 7 p.m. next Monday.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.